All right, we want to welcome you back to the podcast. Scott McLeod here, the associate publisher of Flagstaff Golf Magazine, PGA Canada professional. Without my co-host, my usual co-host this week, Stefan Tiedorf is off on vacation, but I think we found a suitable replacement just for the week. Sorry, Brad Lawrence. I know we talked about maybe bringing you on. We'll have to do it in the future because I've got a good friend here, a longtime friend. You probably know him from Twitter if you follow him there. Name the Pro, Wrong Answers Only, and Trevino Tuesday. Rob Miller, straight from New Jersey. How you doing today, bud?
I'm doing great, Scott. I appreciate that. That sorry, I appreciate that. That was an American sorry too. I like that.
I like that.
I think you brought me on just to show off a little bit.
I like it. Now we've known each other for quite some time. Like I said, people might know you from Twitter, but you've got a bit of a background too, not only in podcasts, but several other websites and things as well. We got to know each other back in the Golf WRX days, which if we think about it now, that's 15, 16 years ago, which is kind of insane, really.
Yeah, that's insane to think about. That we were just a couple people really that had golf interests then kind of. Well, you had more of a media background than I had, certainly, but then we've come this far. It's crazy. And just from the love of golf equipment, and now we talk golf and consume golf every day. So when I mentioned some things on Twitter, I'm like, wow, that's interesting to me, but does anybody even remember that? Because that's a long time ago. Someone posts like a DCI Blacks the other day in a recent tweet, right, from Club Champion. And I had to look. I'm like, all right, when were these out of circulation? It was like 96. Are you kidding me? Wow.
I used to sell them. DTRs and DCIs. The people that had the extra money would get the DCIs either in gold or black. And the DTRs, which didn't, had a little bit fewer options. But yeah, that's the 1990s, dude. So a lot of the people that are maybe on Twitter and social media right now probably weren't even born.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's definitely crazy. So. Cool. I'm happy to be here. And I call him Mr. Dorf. I'm happy to take Mr. Dorf's place for the week.
I'm sure he's happy with that. Obviously, you've been on before as a guest, which has been great. And we certainly appreciate you jumping on. Let's get to the week that was. Obviously, it was the off season for the PGA Tour, that big 1 week of the year. But lots going on because obviously, looking back at what's happened in the last little while and, looking ahead to what we're going to be dealing with and seeing both in men's golf and women's golf as well. Why don't we get first to your birdie of the week?
Wow. I'm going first with the birdie. Yeah. I appreciate that. Sure. That doesn't happen on course.
So, I've heard that before.
I appreciate that. My birdie, I was going to say Brooks Koepka's honesty, Brooksy's honesty in Golf Digest's article that came out just yesterday after recording this. That was amazing. And I put a tweet out there that, golf is very different. We don't have that locker room like you do with team sports, like football. There's no trades. There's no real coach. There's no real coach drama that goes on in golf. So you're always looking for sound bites, and Brooks gives them. And this was a really good interview. I think it really humanizes them a bit.
I agree.
I enjoyed it. I would even give that an eagle if I could, but that's not a category on this show.
Well, it could be in the honorable mention,
Could be in the honorable mention, but I have too much. There's too much stuff to discuss later. But I'm also going with, I noticed that you have some thoughts on there. So I'm going to bring in Will Zalatoris as PGA Tour Rookie of the Year. I don't fully understand how you can be Rookie of the Year of a tour that you don't have full status on, but here we are, 2021.
Yeah.
This is what happens. And I was happy to see that. I thought it was going to be, just a lock. Yeah. Some people were saying no, but that's my favorite thing that has really come out this week. He deserved it.
Yeah. I mean, really, there wasn't a lot of competition in that category. Obviously, Garrick Higo, had won as well, but, he had jumped over from the European Tour. It was pretty obvious that Zalatoris is going to be the guy. And if you look through the PGA Tour regulations and how they're eligible, he's technically a rookie, even though he wasn't, a full member at the time. That's an easy one. That's a lock that way. As far as the Brooks interview, and I think the point you made on Twitter as well was a great one. And the fact that, here's people wanting honesty from an athlete, And then they complain when they are honest. So people, you can't have it both ways. Either you get the honest answers and you say, man, I want people to say what they're actually thinking. But then, you know, you can't be critical of it if all of a sudden they are honest, even if you don't like the answers.
Yeah. And as part of the media family, I mean, why don't you like, you have to like sound bites and these tidbits and things that are in there. That's a story in itself. And the honesty is refreshing. One of my Trevino Tuesday posts, and I didn't even know this at the time, but it was kind of talking about that as well, where, you know, Lee says everybody has all these coaches. You've got a coach on what to say. You've got a coach on what to think. You got a coach on what to eat. You got a coach on how to swing the long ball. Coach on what, how to play the short game. You got a putting coach and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, his quote is that, you know, you give me a bucket of chicken and a six pack of beer and I'll kick your butt. You know, yeah. That was honest.
And that's really being authentic or being yourself. And I think, you know, I think the easiest thing to do is to be truthful. I mean, the hardest thing people know is if you lie, it's, you're going to get caught in that lie at some point because it's not the truth. So, you know, players that are thoughtful, Rory is a great example. Now, people maybe like what comes out of his mouth, so they're not as critical of it, although sometimes they are when, you know, he just gives his own thoughts. But sometimes they seem to think, you know, Brooks is putting on a show when he's just being himself. And you're right. I mean, the depth of that interview was great. And you said, you know, humanizing him and the fact that, hey, you know what, he's not, you know, we put these guys on the pedestal all the time and we sort of want them to be a certain way. We can't criticize them if all of a sudden they're just themselves.
I agree with that completely. And someone had posted about, you know, he says he'd rather be a baseball player and this and that. And are we not allowed to have our childhood dreams anymore?
Right.
How many people have a childhood dream and then they actually wind up fulfilling it? Just because you're a golf fan and that would be your dream to play on the PGA Tour, it doesn't mean that has to be Brooks Koepka's dream, you know, type of thing.
That's
just the way things go. But, you know, people are going to come out, have their own opinions. And in general, I mean, these are the things that are so good because this is what fuels, you know, sports talk and talk radio and everything. Even Twitter, some people say it's a, you know, it can be a cesspool and I need a break. And it's true, but at the same time, they're debates. However, you know, you could just ignore. You can ignore, you can block, you can mute, whatever you want to do with people. And, you know, sometimes it has to happen. Then, thankfully, not very often.
Yeah.
But that's just, that's his opinion. And I really liked hearing it. And it was refreshing to me.
I agree 100%. And, you know, that was my birdie of the week as well, was just his continuing honesty. And I think if people just learn to respect that and learn to think, okay, he is who he is. Don't just project in your mind what you want him to be and then expect him to adhere to that. Just let him be who he is. And I think after a time, you'll sort of respect that a little bit more. Quickly, my par is real simple before we get to yours, which I really liked, actually. Just this PGA Tour off season. I mean, you know, I get it. I like having more events. But the negative, of course, is, you know, there's no break. There's no time to sit there and digest, especially now after a big super season with 50 events. You know, we have 1 week to sort of digest what happened. And then, you know, we've got players going out this week and getting ready to play in Napa. So not much of an off season at all. So I'm just going to give that a par because I'm not sure if I hate it or I really like it. I'm just kind of in between.
Yeah, it's not much of an off season. When you'd posted that to me, I didn't know how you were taking it. You know, was that good or is that bad? And I understand now. It's okay. It's a good par. You know, I had a good par on that. I had, you know, we could do better, but let's move on. Right.
Par is always the hardest one every week. And I say that to Stefan all the time. You know, it's easy to love something or hate something, but, you know, to sit on the fence and be in between with something, it's always hard to come up with those pars. But you have, and I like where you went with this regarding collabs. So why don't you extrapolate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I thought about this long and hard, and I think I had like six different things in there over the course of the last 24 hours.
That's more pars than you usually have it around, isn't it?
It is. That's a 2-day club championship round or tournament. I went with collabs because collabs are good and bad to me. I like them. I like it overall good, right?
And we should preface this as well, based on your background and doing a lot of things in graphic design. And, you know, that's the angle that you have when you look at this as well, not only just being a golf person, correct?
Yeah, I look at everything. I started doing user interfaces just because I was the only one who could figure out how to use a graphics program and back in the computer days. And I've kind of I've designed some head covers at WRX over the years and so forth. So I'm a visual person, visual learner, and whenever I see something, I always critique it that way. I never look at it. I think the difference is I look at it and I say, I can do better than that with a lot of it, right? Yeah. Good, yeah. Bad, or indifferent. I'm not saying that I'm a master of it. It's like, but I would have done it this way. So I always look at it with that kind of eye. Collabs, you know, you'll get a Nike shoe collab with Sheamus, I think it was, which I did not like personally, but I think that's a lot of this happens with those, right? Yeah. You're not the target demo. You're not into that. You're not into this. You know, Macklemore has his own golf line, and there's nothing for me there. I can't let John do it. You know, I know the grandpa look is something that's caught on. I don't want to be a grandpa yet, you know, despite, you know, aging every year. You know, this is that. I don't like that. But then, you know, there's a Drake Nike collab today, which launched recently. And the Dormy workshop, and you had Paul from Dormy on last week, right?
Jeff, yeah.
Jeff, sorry.
That's okay.
That Cinnamon Toast Crunch, that whole setup was just glorious to me. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
So what is it that you liked about it? I mean, like you said, some collabs you like, some you don't. Obviously, yeah. A lot of the collabs are made to be, you know, really small market. They're not meant to be mainstream. But what is it that appealed to you about that particular one?
Well, it's kind of an iconic cereal. And I, like, one of my sons, like, that's his go-to. So that pulls you in right there. It's like, what's the best cereal? Cinnamon Toast Crunch, period. You know, so it's like, wow, I would love to have that head cover. That'd be pretty cool. And then retail price is $2.99. It's like, all right, I'm shocked, but I get it. You're dealing with General Mills. You're dealing with having to make these things.
Yeah, Dormy's high-end premium
super
stuff.
High. This is not something that just gets, you know, shipped on a container and it takes 6 months to get here from overseas.
Yeah, you're not going to see it on the shelves at Walmart.
Correct. And functional and everything it's really neat. The bad part about it is you've got the resellers, right? Mm. You're always going to get that with them. And if you log on and you can get one of the putter covers for $500 on eBay, you are a lucky person right now. I was just did a quick check of it.
Did you? Yeah.
So, you know, I'm out on it, but I like it because I think, you know, just like everything, there's kind of like a cost of entry. So as these become more and more popular, those type of collabs, they might come down a little bit. Maybe they're a little bit more in the pipeline in order to purchase and so forth too. But I love that. I love that kind of like pop culture reference and things like that. That's just kind of my style. I think I love the creativity of it. So I like them. I don't like all of them by any means. And the flipping is kind of annoying. So it just gets a par for me. You don't stop them. You keep going forward, but then there's going to be probably more misses in my eyes than hits.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why they're not mainstream. I mean, you know, they're kind of just taking a shot at it. Either they're going to be flipped a bunch, super popular, sell out really fast, or they're going to be on the discount rack someplace at Edwin Watts. Right. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And, you know, you mentioned that as far as the flipping, you know, even the Titleist with their golf ball, the Left Dot golf ball, I don't know if you know this or looked into it, happened to have a person over here the other night, and we were talking about it because he's considering playing the Left Dot, who's a, you know, plays some professional golf, and they're already being flipped for around almost I think $200 a dozen. Jeez. Which is insane. So, I mean, you know, that's the unfortunate part. You know, people are buying them up that are not going to use them, and they're just looking at it as a secondary market opportunity to make some money. And, you know, you can't prevent it. Unfortunately, that's the world it is today. But yeah, you'll probably see that as well with that, you know, that Nocta collab. You know, it's Drake, right? Even if people are not golfers, they're probably going to be buying it up and trying to flip it as well.
Yeah. I have a quick aside. I have a friend that works for Supreme.
Okay.
And they, when they do a release, they basically, I mean, they're king of collabs. They're all collabs, really, you know, when it comes down to it. And they expect a full third of every release to just be, you know, bot flippers type of thing. So maybe, I would say that that's probably true here. And in these cases, unfortunately, that's what we have to deal with.
Yeah.
But, you know, overall, hey, if you got the money, you can get it.
There you go. There you go. All right, let's get to our bogeys of the week here. You know, obviously you can get to double bogeys and triples or whatever, but these are just our bogeys. You've got one related to the Ryder Cup, which is something we're going to talk a little bit more about in the show, but where are you at with this one?
Yeah, this isn't a double bogey, but it's two bogeys in a row. I just, one isn't a bogey by choice, and it's no Francesco Molinari at the Ryder Cup. And we remember, you know, he and Fleetwood were amazing. We're missing the Molly Wood magic this year. And it's rightfully so, right? He's not playing well. He was injured. He also made an equipment change. And I guess all those factors, you know, kind of really mucked up the last few years for him because, you know, he, as far as 2019, I mean, he was pretty spot on.
Sure.
He's right there in the Masters and everything.
Yeah, he was the final group in the Masters in 2019. Yeah. I know that. Yeah.
So it's a shame we're not going to see a repeat of maybe that 5.0 magic or 5.0 magic, I should say. That's something which I don't think we all realize. But the captain's pick bogey is not putting Kevin Na. I'm not saying the other guys aren't deserving.
Yeah. And I'm right there with you.
Yeah. I mean, put Bryson with Nah, they would frustrate the hell out of the opponents every time. Just keep putting him out there.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see it. And I know everyone says he's not accurate enough off the tee, but aren't we supposed to pick people who are hot? He's very hot right now.
Yeah.
That, you know, whatever the U.S. has done over the last, let's see, two wins since 2006. Am I correct with that?
Something like that. Yeah.
It's not working. No. I understand you're mixing it up with six captain picks now. Now we're putting it all in the captain's basket. But boy, I think it was the time to get him on that team. If not for his play, but if they win, then you could have some great like Bryson Kevin Na commercial like Molinari and and Fleetwood did, like waking up in bed, maybe something with hammocks. I was thinking like a Gilligan's Island vibe. Because I think Bryson is the perfect
who's Gilligan?
Well, I think Bryson is the perfect blend of like Gilligan and the professor. Like if they were just two together, I don't know who Skipper is. I don't know. I don't know. Couples?
Oh man, that's deep thoughts there or whatever.
I went through the looking glass.
Yeah. And you know what? There might be something in that too. When you talked about Bryson and Na frustrating the other players. I mean, we'll go back to that interview with Koepka, and he talked about Phil Mickelson in that interview, and he talked about body language and, you know, how it's important of how players are affecting other people's play. And I'm not saying it's so much gamesmanship, but it's part of the psychology of what happens. So you're right. I mean, if Bryson and Na could just frustrate or put, you know, a little bit of a needle in the side of one of the other teams, it might make a difference for a point, and a point can be critical.
Absolutely. Even if you get 2 points, 2.5 over the first 2 days, because I think the thing that always strikes me about the Ryder Cup and even with Solheim Cup, that when there's a 2 point lead going into singles, that's a pretty big lead.
Yeah, very much.
You don't think that's that much. You're like, all right, well, that's just two wins right there.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's bigger than that. And I don't know if it, I don't have, you know, data to support that, but you seem to see that 2 point lead every, you know, going into the singles every year. And it's just, chances are it's insurmountable for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, you can't fight the math. I mean, that's really what it comes down to in the end. All right, let's move on here. And I think we're going to have some differing opinions as we go up. And you've got a little bit of your honorable mention here. And I've got part of that as my bogey as well. And we'll talk a little bit about the player of the year discussion, which obviously was a hot take on social media this week with the Patrick Cantlay versus John Rahm. Certainly, we should let people know the players decide this. It's not the fans. So we all don't get a vote. We can certainly have our opinions as well. What was your opinion of this, and why did it jump in maybe as a double bogey for you?
Well, I think if you look, Rahm had the best year by far. You look at his major record, you look at the players' record, which
15 top tens, as we talked about last week on the show.
Yeah, ridiculous. That and a major. So
yeah,
you know, the best way to sum it up, and I love tweets that are a little cryptic. You have to sit there and figure it out. But Kyle Porter, CBS, said Rahm won 3 tournaments and got credit for 1. Cantlay won 2 tournaments and got credit for 4. Normal sport. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Because that, you know, we all know about the.
Do you believe that though? Because when it comes down to, I mean, you give your take and I'll give you mine.
Yeah, it comes down to wins, but 2 of the wins were during exhibition season, because that's really what the FedEx Cup is. It's an exhibition season.
Not the player's fault.
No,
PGA Tour sets that up. All they can do is show up and try to shoot the lowest score, and sometimes they get some net help with that to make it win. But
yeah, what did the Pittsburgh Steelers have? Cupcake schedule last year. They were like 10-1 or something like that, and then hit the wall. But you can only play who you're playing, right? That's I agree. It's not, but you could still have an opinion that, you know, John Rahm was the most consistent and should have, if it wasn't, you know, take the COVID into account and so forth, and full field events and the quality of the field of which he won. I just think he had a better year than period. And you know, maybe that is part of the personality of Rahm. I tend to gravitate towards people who are fiery and show some emotion than someone who's very stoic. And you know, that's out there. Like, I would say, you know, Cantlay is like a Retief Goosen in his prime, you know, just similar to that kind of demeanor. And I don't mind if John Rahm shows his emotions. He gets mad. That I like that. So I think I've come around on that. I've been more of a fan of Rahm over the last 2 years, that, you know, a lot of COVID lockups and you'll watch as much golf as you can, so to speak. So yeah, that might have something to do with it. And if I was voting, I would, I'd be happy to be on your show anytime. Voting is, I'm a pretty good player, but you know, if I was voting, I would, maybe I'm not supposed to take that into account, but I do, because I can.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get it as far as wins, and you can only, you know, you can only play by the rules that, you know, you show up and play for. So trying to discredit maybe the tour championship, yeah, it's a little hard. The other side of it too, you know, while the odds, we just said that for the Solheim Cup, getting a 2-point lead, it's hard to overcome. So we look at John Rahm at the Memorial having a 6-stroke lead, but we also have to remember that exact same weekend on the Korn Ferry Tour, a player came back from 7 strokes to win. So it's not like it was 100% lock. Yes, the odds were in the favor of Rahm winning that, but I'm a little irked when, you know, especially people that expect to be credible on Twitter as golf authorities automatically give him that win, because last I checked, you know what, you got to play it right to the end till you sign your card. So there's no given as far as that's concerned. If the tournament was done after 54 holes, that's fine, but it was not.
What you said is absolutely true. It might be wrong, but it's true.
Yeah, no, well, it's kidding. Exactly. I know, and exactly. But that's the fact. And you know, I tend to lean toward the factual side versus the theoretical side, because it's easy to throw out theories there. I mean, it's very easy, but you know, it's not the fact. So that's just the way it is. Hey, you know what? I was happy with it either way. But I just have to say, 4 wins versus 1. You know, if it was closer, if it was maybe 2 wins by Rahm, you know, then maybe, you know, right away. And I get it, over the year, 15 top tens, like you say, play in the majors and stuff like that. But again, you know, it comes down to the players, and God knows how many of them voted. You know, they've got to have, I think, 15 starts to be able to vote. So it's a limited field as far as who can vote, and who knows who's friends with who either.
Yeah, it's definitely true. That could have an account. And I was thinking about that. I don't know if it was mentioned out there, but that's true. It could be popularity as well. Yeah. Who knows? Who's to say? That's just, we're just speculating, but you're right. I do look at, you know, all those things were facts. I was joking about you being wrong about it, but these are good things where we have these debates.
Of course.
In golf, it's great. It's great to have that. Normally it's a lock and you're just like, oh yeah, it's just, yeah. You know, and as you can see, you know, there's what was it? PGA Player of the Year is different, right. Than different. PGA yep. Tour. So you see that it's opposite and it's, yeah. It says different criteria. It's not just a popularity contest. There's some measurement there as well.
Well, it's good at least that people have enough of an interest, especially in multiple players, that they're willing to talk about it because that means at least they care. So at least they're engaged in some way, which, you know, is a win really for the sport.
Sure. But can we please not say that the Tour Championship is a legit tournament?
It's not.
You got a staggered start. This is like, you know, didn't we all see the race, the Seinfeld episode, you know?
It is a net tournament. It really comes down to it. I mean, you know, you got to think about it. I mean, you know, again, it's hard to come up with a great format, and I get what they're trying to do and to create, you know, no confusion over who's this or who's that as far as the FedEx Cup champion versus the Tour Championship winner. But I'm not sure this is it. I'm still not sold on it for sure.
Yeah. Why can't you? You know, I know that the FedEx Cup is confusing and it always will be confusing. I think we all have to accept that as a reality. But, you know, previously you could root as a fan for someone to win the FedEx Cup and someone to win the tournament.
Yeah.
Tournament. Sorry. I say tournament. Too much.
Tournament.
Tournament. That's so after all these Trevino Tuesdays, I should know that. But that, you know, to win that you could root for two different people in the tournament. So,
yeah.
Why isn't that a win-win in mm-hmm. a sense where that was good? They just, you know, it's like banning the long putter. It's not good aesthetic. So
yeah. And I think I think part of that element is trying to reach everyone and try to dumb down the game a little bit and realize that golf is still a niche sport. It's not going to appeal to everybody. So trying to make it more relatable to the common fan, to make it more like, you know, some of the other major sports. I don't know if that's always the right plan of attack for the golf. You know, it is a niche sport. You're not going to satisfy everyone. So trying to dumb down things, I don't think is always the best way.
Yeah. I would say that speaking of dumbing down the game, it would take every week we could talk about Tied versus All Square. And I'll leave it at that.
I love it.
Drives me absolutely crazy. It's just and the Solheim, I don't know if you caught this, but Solheim Cup, the US site, would list matches at All Square. So
yes,
kudos Solheim Cup.
USA. Yeah, love that. Speaking of the Solheim Cup, I know you had a backup double bogey as part of your honorable mentions. And you know what? We're going to go into your backup because I like your backup. And I think it's something that's important to discuss. You know, we've talked a lot about the Solheim Cup on this show. And you know, it's a great event. But you had some thoughts related to the ratings.
Yeah, the ratings came out. And as unfortunately, as expected, the you know, the Solheim Cup got trounced.
Yeah.
And in the ratings to pretty much everything. Now, yeah. Part of that has, I guess, it's funny. I listened to your podcast last week and you were saying that not having it on NBC 100% of the time hurts. But as a golf fan and used to watching and consuming golf, I thought it was great because I didn't have to find Peacock and
yeah.
In order to watch golf. And it's like, oh, we've got 1 hour here. And then we're going from golf channel is now golf, blah, 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 going to NBC. Then we're going to Peacock and then we're back on golf and mm-hmm. then it runs over and it winds up somewhere else. You know, that kind of stuff drives me nuts. I thought it was good. I thought the coverage was very good. I thought there was the commercial breaks. I don't know if they were purposely limited, but they seemed to, you know, there were more.
They were pretty good as far as giving a flow to the event. They didn't really break it up that much. Yeah, few and far between
compared to typical PGA Tour coverage. Yeah. And I like that. But I don't know how to solve the problem. But for me, I watched that over the Tour Championship. It was an easy decision. And yeah. I probably watched 85% of Solheim Cup. I thought that the golf was very good. High quality. That's the number one takeaway. Real high quality golf. The U.S. did not putt as well. I'm very upset with the whole Biggie Smalls pod. They need to step up there There are no big papas in there. They needed to step up and do that. I was impressed with Lexi putting.
Yeah.
She was streaky, but it was like she'd miss a one footer and then she'd roll in like 3 30 footers. It was kind of amazing. But it's hard to get that kind of interest. And I'm guessing for ratings, you really need a superstar. You need a superstar that a lot of people can identify with. Like golf had Tiger Woods and we still see the Tiger effect. You know, if Happy Gilmore, which came out in 96, came out in 98, it's a totally different movie because you've got Tiger Woods now who's made his mark on the PGA Tour. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but that's an interesting topic.
That might be a whole episode.
Yeah. So you don't have that person that transcends it. I, you know, as good as, you know, Ochoa and Annika, of course, were, it wasn't that person that really people knew outside of the golf world.
Yeah.
Maybe Annika, I guess you could argue, but that was a long time ago. So I think the star needs it, and they've got a crappy TV contract. I mean,
a crappy TV contract, but they're also, it's a crappy date. I mean, US Open, we got football, Corn Ferry Tour Championship, Tour Championship. I mean, there's only so many people, there's only so many eyeballs, and only so many people are going to split away from the other events. So, you know, is dates always going to be an issue? There's no perfect date for almost any of these events, but certainly, I mean, I know for myself, I watched more Solheim Cup than I did Tour Championship by far, but I was also very interested in the Corn Ferry Tour Championship, what was going on there. I don't know. I think golf itself kind of hurts itself sometimes when it's, you know, it's trying to split the audience.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good point. There's a lot to digest, right? And there's only so much that you can consume. And if your goal is to increase ratings from a non-golf audience, it's going to be really tough. I mean, it is definitely a difficult event to do that.
Yeah, I know. I did think, though, there was a lot of energy, you know, despite the fact there wasn't a lot of Europeans in the audience, short of the, you know, the junior Solheim Cup teams that were up there. But there was a lot of energy on the first tee. And, you know, there were certainly, you know, or at least perceived that way. And they gave it the coverage enough so that you had the thought that there was a lot of things going on or whatever. But you know, again, I think it's great matches. We can't always get the fairy tale finish like we had at Glen Eagles with Pedersen. But you're right. I mean, it continues to progress. It's a great product. It just needs a little bit more spotlight. And I agree with you. If it's on a single platform, and I get it, you know, streaming versus broadcast or whatever, but if at least on broadcast, if it's on a single platform, that probably engages the people to stay there longer and keep more eyeballs on it, or at least know where it is.
Yeah, it's definitely true. And just from a play aside, if I were Hurst, I would have made the US team stay after school and play the first hole after day one over and over again till everyone birdied it. Period. Right, where that started, you know, I know you want to hear the noise and get the crowd going on the first tee, but how many times have we see that left bunker? You start off and, you know, you give a point away on the first hole. That was a big problem. So I would have gone Herb Brooks and just been again.
I like it. I like the Herb Brooks reference for sure.
This is the
Canadian podcast, right?
You know, exactly.
Gonna talk hockey. All right. My last thing for the double bogey. There was a lot of discussion, and you know, again, I say a lot of discussion. Social media is such a influencer as far as what we talk about and what we think about. Generally, people in the real world probably don't care. But even the discussion about Billy Horschel not getting a phone call and people worrying about this, I mean, I think it's a double bogey, people. I mean, he can't call everyone. I get it. There's a lot of people that are in the mix. And really, when it comes down to it, the most important people are the people that made the team. It's not apologizing to the people that didn't make it.
Yeah, you're spot on there. That is, I don't get it. Unless Stricker decided that he was letting Billy know you're in consideration and then never called him.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
You know, that stinks, but I don't think that's the way it is at all. If Billy Horschel wants to be surprised, then I guess be surprised. But I really didn't expect I actually looked this up. And I think the only person that I saw in anywhere who picked Horschel to be on the team is David Dusick of golf.com. Out of any preview that I saw.
Yeah.
So that's one. That's about it. I think that he was fringe at best. So I don't know why people are getting upset about that.
Yeah, it'd be different if he was a core player who had a tremendous season. Granted, he played well, but it wasn't like he's one of the ultra top guys. So I get it. Maybe if it's that situation where you leave out a superstar, maybe a player that, maybe it's Spieth, and you leave him out. Maybe there's a phone call there because, he's a guy that could be on the team again in a couple of years where Stricker could be an assistant or involved with the team or whatever. You want to keep in that person's good graces. But, if it's basically a player that you're not sure if they'll ever be on a team, I'm not sure it's really that important to make sure that they're okay and they're tucked into bed, that they're knowing that, they're still cared about.
Yeah, I noticed you didn't include a Patrick Reed's quote.
Who?
Do you think Patrick got a phone call? I guess
I don't know if Patrick got a telegram or a fax. Really, I
mean, telegram. It might be skywriting.
It might be. It might be. Who knows? And you know what? I mean, granted, solid player, obviously, a contender to be on that team, but. Dynamics, and we'll get into that in a little bit after our interview this week, but we can talk a little bit about dynamics of teams and why things are important, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about Reed then. So why don't you save your thoughts on that? We'll get to a little quick equipment talk here and then we'll get to our interview. How about that?
Sounds good.
All right. So I just want to get some ideas from you. As you mentioned off the top, we're both equipment guys. We're always immersed in that world. I just want to kind of get some thoughts from you on maybe some of the things that you've been seeing lately. We're, obviously heading into the 22 season, seeing a lot of things debuted, not necessarily just hard goods, but other factors or things that are going on in the golf equipment world. Is there something that stands out for you so far, especially in the last couple of weeks?
Well, the thing that I admittedly don't know a ton about, and I think a lot of us don't, because I'm not quite sure the messaging, is the Ping ball fitting platform, Ballnamic.
Yeah.
Now, you might know more about this than I do. I'm not sure.
I might have a 9-pound Ping history book here where the word Ballnamic is said in there more than a few times.
Is that what it is? Is that where the name comes from?
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're dealing with that, you're talking about something that's decades old. It's not necessarily relevant to the current consumer.
Yeah, it's kind of, let's just put two things together and just mash them. What was the Seinfeld, my second Seinfeld thing of the day, Molin Spring? Is that it?
Exactly. Right?
Yeah. It's kind of like, what is this name? And then I will tell you, the logo looks decades old to me as well. Yeah. If you want to look at it that way, maybe it is, but I think that honestly, if something is $39, which is this ball fitting platform, right? You put in you pay $39. It's brand agnostic. Ping doesn't make golf balls. That you go in there, you tell your characteristics of your game, what you like, even putter feel, that type of thing, which is interesting. I saw in a couple articles. For $39, it spits out suggestions on balls to play.
Yeah.
I don't know how the final results come, but that $39, I could argue that that's probably the best money you could spend this year.
I would agree. Yep.
To get a ball that you like, that's based on science and feel, and then play that ball all the time.
Yeah.
Because that's the number one thing I think that people probably don't do. They might have something that's their preference, but they grab, oh, I found this. So I found a Pro V1.
You don't know how many golf lessons where I ask a player to, let's go over to the putting green here. We're going to chip or we're going to putt, grab three golf balls. And the first thing I look at is whether they have the same three golf balls or not. And the number of times they're going to chip and they have three different types of golf balls, brands of golf balls, that, nowhere feel the same, react the same or whatever. It happens a lot for sure.
Absolutely. I think that's a great example of it is people on putting green just have a bunch of things that where they reach for whatever was in the bag and just go to, and then you get it. That tells the story right there.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're playing poorly, then you're more likely to just grab like whatever it is, or a found golf ball. I'll just use this. It was barely in the water type of thing.
Yeah.
Those type of things. But I, Ballnamic to me, I honestly wish I could take control of their Twitter account, because it's just like, oh my gosh, there's got to be so many interesting things there to discuss. But for $39, and I'll, that's the cost, no lie, of a Jack and Coke at the Kiss concert in Atlantic City.
That's crazy. That
I looked at the receipt. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Wow. What?
You know, that I couldn't believe it. But $39 is nothing.
Yeah. Especially relative to how much you might spend on golf balls, you know, in the next year, 2 years, whatever the case may be, and, you know, be playing the wrong golf ball.
Yeah. And that can really, you know, like, it really affect you. Now, I get that there's price as well, especially in the golf ball world. If you're not, you're not a great golfer, or you lose a few around, then yeah, you don't want to be paying $56 a dozen, but
yeah.
Apparently takes that into account as well, and goes through that. So I go onto that Twitter account, and that's really all I see of it, because everything's behind this whole firewall kind of paywall or whatever.
Right.
But the Twitter account has 18 tweets explaining what it is.
Yeah. Do you think that's a problem though? I mean, one of the things is that, you know, obviously we've had Marty Jurtson on here from Ping, one of their brilliant engineers, you know, and a great guy or whatever, but, you know, we're talking about something that's fairly technical, and it's really hard to kind of, you know, distill it down to really simple messages. So maybe that's sort of the issue more than anything. And I mean, you don't want to market it too simply, because then people don't think they're maybe getting what their value is for the $39 as far as what's behind the curtain. So that's a hard story to tell, I think.
I think so, but that's why marketing exists. There's way too many, you know, there's many products in the golf industry that were great, but yeah. they just died on the vine or died off on the shelves. Ask Adams Golf, you know, they had great product and they tried to do everything. They had, you know, the slot technology on the top and that silver was the same shade as Mercedes silver. I forget the actual color and so forth.
That. Yeah.
You know, those type of things. But if you don't have that kind of marketing behind it, you know, the old saying, you don't sell the steak, you sell the sizzle.
Yeah.
There has to be some truth to that. That's why marketing exists. You know, there's so many things that are intriguing. Like they put out a tweet the other day, and it says, during driver testing, we saw some golf balls fly up to 20 yards shorter than the furthest flying ball. That distance loss could cost you up to 2 strokes per round. That seems shocking to me, but it also seems like it could cost you more than 2 strokes a round. Like, I think, I don't know where that data is coming from, but I think, you know, 20 yards, when I retweeted that, people were like, that's way more than 2 strokes a round. It has to be.
Yeah.
You know, if you give me 20 more yards, I'm a happy camper. I don't care where the ball is. You know, it doesn't matter if it's in the rough. I'll take 20 yards.
And you don't even care if you score better. You just want the 20 extra yards.
I'd sign up for that, right away. So yeah. I just think there's no photo with it. You know, that kind of stuff. I think that there's a compelling story to tell. And I thoroughly agree that this is probably money well spent, and probably the best way to spend your money to get better. Take it in and then say, hey, do I want to do it? Do I want to follow the advice? Maybe I'll get a couple of sleeves and test it and figure it out. But I love the concept. I just think the execution needs to match it.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be around for a while. So I think, you know, maybe they'll get a little better at that storytelling with it. I'm certainly hopeful of that. I know for me, you know, when I talked about equipment, I was actually quite happy that you threw that in the notes, because it was like, it's the number one story for me of standing out, you know, because it, you know, kind of matches up with sort of everything, and it's something new, whereas a lot of other products are really just iterations of past stuff.
Correct. And I really do like I've been through fitting experiences as well, where I remember I was getting fit for a hybrid once and they said, that's it. That's the spin numbers we're looking for. Perfect. And I'm like, this shaft feels awful. Like, yeah. I don't want to even hit the ball with this thing. And we went through a couple things and found one that was a happy medium. or something that I liked to feel better. It was still matching the numbers. So taking that into account to me is important as well. Just like looks of a putter. You like a sight dot, you like a line, this type of thing. Everyone should probably have a line, but
yeah, I mean, I don't know. We can argue that one. That's for sure. Well,
I know.
But I mean, fitting is kind of the last frontier, and it's such a big frontier, and it really personalizes the investment that we make as far as equipment. And, you know, I guess trying to put people in a box is pretty hard to do. And, you know, every single person's going to be a little bit different. So, you know, the fact that this exists is great. The fact that it's coming from, you know, a brand that doesn't really have skin in the game, which is even better, because you're obviously not going to trust it. Even if it came from, you know, Titleist, which is obviously, you know, the number one golf ball company in the world, and they obviously had their own fitting tools, but people are obviously going to be more skeptical of it if it's coming from them or a Bridgestone or whoever else, TaylorMade, rather than, you know, Ping.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you can easily make the argument that Ping is technically has the best background in the industry from, you know, when you're talking about shafts, everybody looks at the Ping charts, the balls now and so forth. And I want to be clear. I'm not just trying to go out there and say, you've got a bad logo.
Oh, no.
I care. Like, I'm generally like really interested in, and I want to see this thing, all the meat and potatoes of it. I just want to know what's kind of like behind the curtain to compel me to do it, to evaluate it. You know, I'm sure I'll go in there and I'll drop $39 at some point, but you know, I just think that it could be, it should be presented in a more,
consumable way.
Consumable way is the perfect way of describing it.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think the thing is that, you know, we probably both like it so much that you almost become invested in it and you want it to be as good as it possibly can. So that's the only reason you kind of look for flaws in it, is because you're like, damn, this is really, really good. Yeah. Everybody should be doing this. You know, hopefully, you know, some of the other things that they're doing around the marketing of it stop people from, you know, spending the $39, which they should be doing.
Yeah. And it's not, they're not hitched to some sort of media outlet that's doing it or something like that. It's
right.
It's purely something where they, like you said, they've got no stake in the game. They have they're not, this is an affiliate program or anything. They've crunched the numbers and said, you know, if we're going to do this anyway for us, why can't we develop it for something that's more consumable for out there and the general public? So it's really neat. And I'm hoping to learn more about it.
All right. On the equipment vein, we're going to get to our interview this week. I had Chris Caldwell, who's in Canada here. You know quite well from Twitter. You go back and forth.
I do. I taught him how to use GIFs or GIFs, if you're wrong.
he did tell me that off air for sure.
Yeah.
We've got Chris Caldwell on this week to talk a little bit about their new equipment lines that they've got coming out, which are pretty exciting for them. I think people will really appreciate this interview. And as he says, people are used to having Chris Vachal, you know, who's their engineering and marketing guy and listen to, but Chris Caldwell's a pretty good guy too. So have a listen to this interview and find out more about the new products for Mizuno Golf for 2022. All right, we want to welcome to the show a good friend of ours, Chris Caldwell from Mizuno Golf. Chris and I usually see each other either virtually or in person this time of year because they're coming out with some new products. So welcome to the show, Chris.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Obviously, Mizuno, emerging company, have been around a long time, but man, they certainly have some momentum in the last little while. That's obviously, you know, it's got to change some things for you as far as demand is concerned.
100%. It's been an amazing last 2 years, and we expect it to continue into 2022. Lots of new things on the horizon. You know, we're experiencing the same challenges that every OEM is having. But there's been no doubt. There's been a lot of new requests for our products, and it's been a from a sales perspective, it's been a very good year for us, no doubt.
Yeah, we're certainly, you know, we've seen a lot of free agency within professional players out on the tours. And as a result of it, a lot of clubs are going in the bags for different players from Mizuno. And certainly as a result of it, you know, we're also seeing them show up in pro shops and demo days. And you know, maybe the good players that you see at your golf course are now considering the products, and as they should be, especially as we look ahead to 2022 and a couple of the products we're going to talk about here. But are you seeing that as well? I mean, are you seeing that when you head out to the golf courses that, you know, there's always those, you know, we'll call them the big companies that are out there. Not that Mizuno is not a big company for sure, but the ones that were traditionally in the bags for many years, but now people are maybe going, you know what, I'm going to look at Mizuno for other reasons, because, you know, obviously players are making that choice, not based on just finances. They're making a choice based on performance and feel. Are you seeing that when you're out there on the road?
Yes, a lot. And we're not seeing it from the better players. That's where the bulk of our sales are coming from. The majority of our sales are coming from the game improvement side, the JPX side, the Hot Metal Pro, the 921 Forged. The Hot Metal especially, the 921 Hot Metal is by far, in terms of units and sales and whatnot, market share, is our number one iron. And, you know, without misspeaking, maybe our number one iron of all time.
Wow.
So where is that coming from? Maybe it comes down a little bit from the tour where we get some brand exposure that filters down. But, you know, personally, I think a lot of people now are a little more savvy at getting their information and looking at reviews, independent reviews and, you know, word of mouth and things like that. And so now we are, while we're not definitely, obviously not in that sort of quote unquote discussion of top four brands or three brands, but significantly a relevant brand. And so we're getting a lot more people coming in, oh, hey, I've heard a lot of great things about product X, or, and not even the iron. We're seeing it in the wood category as well too, where, you know, a lot of tremendous reviews and the product performs. Yeah, a lot of new faces at days, a lot of new interested parties you know, and I think we're doing a better job as well overall, Mizuno Global, of getting that word out as well too, because obviously we don't have the marketing span and the dollars to just, you know, pump out, you know, Sunday afternoon commercials and have 30, 40 staff players and go that route. We kind of got to do it at a little different, way. But I think it's working, and it's the last 2 years have been evident in just our sales and not just the, you know, obviously the pie is getting bigger, but our share of that pie has grown, which is, it's a great sign. So it's been very positive.
Do you think some of that too, I mean, you mentioned not being just the good players, but do you think that is brand familiarity? Because you obviously got a brand that's been around since, you know, I guess 115, 116 years now. You're getting people that are maybe not the traditional golfers coming over to play the game now. They know Mizuno from sporting goods and other products. So yeah, that's obviously got to be helpful in some way.
Absolutely. 100%. That's a great, great analogy, because if golf through COVID is drawing on more, I guess, non-traditional golfers, if you will, or new golfers to the game, if you're getting slow pitch players, baseball players, volleyball players, obviously Mizuno is a top 2-3 brand in those sporting categories. So yeah, they may be more apt to that guy who, you know, who's played Mizuno ball shoes, and, you know, they may be more apt to try our gear, say, ahead of a TaylorMade, a Callaway, a Ping, a Titleist. So I don't have any data on that, but sure, it certainly makes for a good argument.
I like that. Now, you've got some great new products coming out, as always. I mean, that's the trend for you guys. Your engineers are top-notch, certainly. Let's talk a little bit first about the wedges, the new T22 wedges. A nice marriage here of maybe some products that we've seen in the past, as far as the T7 and T20 from your company, but with some new features as well. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about them and kind of what are the key features?
Yeah, first I should backtrack and just apologize to your listeners that you're stuck with the wrong Chris today. most of your listeners are most probably want to listen to Vachelle and not Caldwell. So, but notwithstanding that, everything I know I learned from him. And
there you go.
When it comes to,
I think that's me too. I think a lot of
us, yeah, well, Chris. I think that's everybody in golf that looks at Mizuno products. But I think you hit the nail on the head with that. And how do I, without kind of going into the weeds and getting really super techy, which can kind of, I don't know, can kind of turn maybe some ears off at times, but it really is, it's a culmination. Mizuno likes to do every product. It's learning from the past and just continuous improvement.
Right.
And so you had T7 and T20, and you know, and the right Chris would say, you know, T7 was super traditional, which, you know, that traditional player looks at. And then we try to, you know, develop and get a little bit more aggressive with T20 to try to keep everything that T7 has. But T22 is the perfect marriage of really of both of those golf clubs. And that's just the perfect way. It has all the tech, the quad cut grooves, the hydro flow grooves, you know, the water resistant, the grain flow forge, all of those things that Mizuno has done great with wedges. And now we've just tweaked it even a little further. So the blade look or the footprint look is a little more compact. We learned from tour and the guy getting the feedback on the tour, that hosel blend into the head, so important with the better players. So adjusted that. And, you know, we've expanded on that grind story with, we offer a tremendous amount of lofts, bounces, you know, from 45 to 62 and four different grinds. So it's kind of, then you couple it with the fact that, well, you know, we've got this, you know, we have three finishes as well. And the, you know, the one that caught, I mean, the denim
was unbelievable. If anybody sees a picture of it, their eyes are automatically going to go to the denim.
Yeah, that I have yet to get in Canada my sample yet for that. It's on the way, but I cannot wait because I still am playing T7 and I love the look, even though my game, I probably should be in something that's, you know, a little less traditional. So I'm really looking forward to upgrading my wedges in my bag, and that denim copper looks outstanding. So looking forward to that.
Yeah. And the denim copper is a couple things too. I mean, it's not just a look. I mean, if people look at it, obviously it has that, you know, kind of antique-y copper finish, but it's a feel as well. And Mizuno has always emphasized, you know, feel with the grain flow forging, but you know, these have a nice copper underlayer as well, which add to the feel, which obviously, you know, I don't think you have to be a great player. You can be any player and you like a nice soft feel off of wedges.
Correct. And so, I mean, that gets back to like back when we launched MP20 and why we went back to that copper underlay in those irons. And it goes back to TN87s back in the 80s. And so we wanted to kind of prove that. So our guys kind of made up prototype A, prototype B, and said, hit these, which one feels better? And literally 100% of the tour professionals at him said, this one, the one that they didn't know, but the one that had the copper underlay. So yes, and Mizuno feels like if any club in your bag should be about feel, should be forged, it's your wedges.
Yeah.
And so we've always said that. So, you know, our forging process out of Japan is, you know, second to none. And so, yeah, the copper look, great. But it also has the benefits of being that copper underlay and having the added feel in that.
And I think an underrated feature, you know, something that came out in the T20 that's, you know, apparent here as well in the T22, is just that weighting in the head. A lot of wedges traditionally weigh in the past, had a lot of their mass low in the head. These have a little bit more higher up in the blade. It really helps the player control the spin a little bit more and maybe get a little bit more performance as well, or more consistency.
Correct. There's that, you know, the CG location progresses as we go up in loft. So we call it a tapered blade design. So you don't get those when you get into the higher lofted clubs. Maybe you're in a little bit of rough, first cut of rough or whatnot, or if the ball rides up on the face, it's not going to have that sort of fly or knuckly. You're going to get a little bit more control and consistency out of your shot. So there's a lot going on in the wedge here that performs, but, you know, and then you add the feel. So it's we and the look and others. Anyway, this wedge checks a lot of boxes. So you know, hopefully we can get it into more hands and people love the new irons that are to come, and they look at replacing their wedges too.
Yeah. And as well, I mean, if we start to look at your product lineup, one thing that I know we've talked about a lot in the last number of years, and, you know, I've done a lot of testing and playing with some of the products, the iterations of your drivers over the years have certainly, you know, come just like the wedges. They've progressed, built on the versions of the past, became more and more successful. You guys had some great drivers in the last little while. Obviously, as I said, have gotten better and better, but, you know, the new Mizuno STG 220 has a nice marriage from a performance standpoint of your past drivers, which have been great, but really blends in some features that really tune in, you know, maybe the fitting for not only the consumer, but, you know, for the fitter as well, so they can really dial in a driver. Why don't you kind of take us through the new STG 220?
Yeah, I think if the rules of golf stated that OEMs can only come out with one driver, this would be it for us.
Yeah.
It is, again, it's a culmination of fine tuning. How do we get something that is going to appeal the look to the better player,
yeah,
yet has forgiveness? And that's always been a tricky thing to say, well, we want to have a low spin animal, but how do you have it more, have it more forgiving that may fit the eye of maybe a middle handicap player who wants a deep face, a smaller footprint look at a dress? This thing does it all. So we've modified and added a third track to the back. And that's what really separates this from past. And why I say, if we had only one driver, in my opinion, this would be it, because that track way in the back in the middle, that you can put both of those weights back there, which makes the club obviously super stable. So it gives you that high MOI. And, you know, so again, and then at the same time with the other two tracks being wider, a little closer, it works for the better player who has, you know, obviously high club speed, high ball speed, who's looking to, you know, decrease spin. And then again, you have directional change. So you have, so it's got everything there in a package that looks tremendous. And then, you know, we've probably been guilty in the past of some of our previous drivers of being maybe a little too gimmicky, if you will, a little too confusing with so many things on the sole. But this one's pretty straightforward. I think everyone's going to understand what's going on here. Yeah. But that center track really does, I think, separate this driver from our competitors, being that it'll suit the better player who wants that low spin, but it also can be a forgiving driver as well.
Yeah, and I think having it not so extreme one way or the other creates a lot more versatility. I mean, you can correct me if you want, but, you know, in going out and seeing fittings and so forth, you know, there's a lot of people that are all of a sudden chasing super low spin. You know, high ball speeds obviously is important, but sometimes they're going too extreme to maybe create a golf club that is good for one shot, but is not super playable all around. And I think one of the things for your drivers in the last little while is that they're well balanced, so that, you know, you'll have more consistency, I think, not only in just your good strikes, just your off-center ones as well. And I think people have to realize is that from a fitting perspective, it's not a long drive contest. You have to play golf. So you have to have that consistency front to back for distance and left to right for distance. And I think that's the secret really for probably some of the Mizuno drivers, is that, you know, they really target that more than anything, to be very balanced.
That's perfect. You want to join our marketing team? I mean, that's perfectly said. I mean, you as a pro and you as a fitter know, and all club fittings are different. And sure, we would all like to have X launch, X spin and hit it, but you're working with certain parameters of how that individual delivers the club to the golf ball. And you may not be able to achieve certain things with that. But I really like this driver because you can manipulate the face angle. You have so many options of getting to that desired result, either with moving the loft or face. There's so many different ways that you can achieve with this one that it's separated from our Z and our X. But probably the biggest, I think, enhancement too that I've left out is really the, you know, the materials of the face and the actual face construction. And we call it Cortex, C-O-R. Our technology to get it, because every driver, I think, and everyone would agree in the market, you hit in the middle, they all work. I mean, there's so many great products out there. So we're trying to get it so it works when you don't hit it so well and be a more consistent driver. So I think we have right now three really good options out there for golfers. But this one here, I think, is a fitter's dream to kind of manipulate numbers and get someone to where they hopefully want to be.
Yeah, I mean, those tweaks are really important just for, you know, fine-tuning everything, just to squeeze out the extra yardage. But as I said, still to maintain stability as well. All right, one other product I want to talk to you about before we move on. I know it's maybe not one that you guys are promoting as much right now, but the Mizuno Pro Irons, which, you know, if anybody looks and has a look and sees these irons that are coming out in February 22, they are pretty slick if you're a traditionalist. Some thoughts on those maybe, and, you know, maybe we can delve into them deeper in the future.
Yeah, they're coming in February.
Yeah. That's it.
We're going to, you know, obviously you're starting to see some information kind of come out there, and I can tell you that they are coming in February.
Yeah, there's some great photos on the Mizuno website. If people want to go and look at the MizunoGolf.com right now in the U.S., they have a blog, History in the Making. If you go to that, and you can have a look at some nice photos of them for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to jump the gun here and just say clearly we would normally launch irons every fall, right?
Right.
So usually September, October. 1 year it's JPX, 1 year it's Mizuno Pro or MP, and so every sort of irons have 2 year life cycles. Always have with Mizuno. It's a staggered launch. Yes, we come up with irons every year, you know, but this year we just felt that due to the sort of the demand that's going on, the amount of volume of custom clubs we're building, that we felt it better to push these out to February to kind of have our fall months to where we can get our turnaround times and custom down to a, you know, and not disappoint people. You know what I mean? We want to be able to have that reset and kind of launch these properly and not, you know, hopefully not have people waiting too long. So, you know, there'll be more information to come. I don't want to let too much out. And,
no worries.
And get a naughty email from some marketing people.
I like that. All right. One thing you're not going to get any naughty marketing emails from is the last thing I'm going to let you go with. And it's a little less corporate. I follow you on social. Obviously, there's probably a bunch of people that follow you on social. How was tomato sauce season?
Oh, exhausting. this year was a lack of planning. It took us, we started at 7 in the morning, 7:30. We didn't finish until 9:30 PM. So,
okay. You may want to explain this tradition first. I mean, obviously I'm putting it out there, but people are probably going, what is he talking about?
Well, basically we're making,
So this is in your neighborhood, correct?
Yeah. It's a fellow neighbor of mine, Italian friend of mine, and his parents have taught us well. And it's been 9 years now, and it's great. So this year we did 14 bushels, which is a lot of tomatoes.
Wow!
And they end up making about 300 1 liter jars of sauce.
Crazy.
So it's a fun tradition. It's a lot of hard work, but it's the end result is. I'll get you some too. I'll send you a couple.
Awesome, that would be amazing.
In the mail, yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Chris. I really appreciate it. Really excited to do some testing with this new products. And I know they're going to be successful. And thanks again for hopping on and your continued friendship.
Awesome. Thanks, Scott. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate that interview. Looking forward to getting out and testing some of those new Mizuno products and looking forward to seeing some of the stuff in 2022 as well. Some of the other things that Mizuno Pro Iron looks pretty sweet. But let's get to the week ahead. We've obviously talked about the week in the past, but, you know, these seasons are getting going again. But, you know, we have some sad news a little bit in the golf industry. And, it you know, again, it's golf adjacent, we'll call it. But Norm MacDonald, obviously a Canadian comedian, age 61, lost his battle with cancer. Huge fan of the game. In fact, you know, his last tweet was about Colin Morikawa. Was about golf. Huge fan. What are your impressions of Norm MacDonald? Because I know obviously you're a big, you know, comedy guy. You probably like, you know, his dry sense of humor that he had. Any thoughts on Norm's passing?
Yeah, it was definitely a thinking man's comic. You know, yeah. Norm was not that prop comic or anything. Didn't curse, and I always appreciate a comedian that doesn't do it. Not like it doesn't have its place, but if you can do it without it, I think you're even funnier. That's my own opinion. But that was such sad news, especially since it was all private. Nobody knew that it was going on. But I remember, you know, I've been on Twitter since, I don't know if it was the end of 2008 or beginning of 2009. So that's
I think it was the same. You and I were around the same time. I think it was kind of like December 2008, because the first PGA show that we were both on Twitter was 2009.
Yeah, it was really strange. I mean, there was maybe five golfers on Twitter, Stuart Sink being the biggest guy back then, you know. Yeah. But somehow years ago, all of a sudden I'd see Norm MacDonald start tweeting about during majors.
Yeah.
If it was a Masters or what it was where I saw
Masters was huge. 2010, he started like live tweeting the Masters pretty much.
Yeah. And you're like, where's this coming from? This is amazing. And that was a whole different medium for him. And I loved it. But being a classic Saturday Night Live fan, of course, I was exposed to Norm Macdonald for so long. I posted like the whole Frank Stallone jokes and
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, I love that one.
That he did.
Number two, Frank Stallone.
Yeah, it's so good. Like,
I think his magic was his delivery, right? Like, if you go back and look at that moth joke, I don't know if you saw that one going around on YouTube. There's a number of ones that, you know, he took you on a journey and then he was able to kind of deliver that punchline. I think that's obviously the magic, is to draw you in and then just stick it to you enough that you're thinking and your brain is working. And then all of a sudden you get that laugh at the end. And, you know, I think he was a master of that.
Yeah, it was almost like, you know, he knew that when he was doing Frank Stallone, or he did another thing on the Weekend Update of, that's what the Germans would have us believe.
Yes,
that was
exactly
the thing he did. That was something which he would hit on every week. And he knew that at least for the first couple of weeks, he was not going to get a laugh out of it, right. But he would just sit there and pause and let you kind of digest what he was doing. And that's almost like it's like a clever tweet. When you see a tweet that's up there and you're like, oh, why is everybody liking this tweet? And then it doesn't say explicitly what it means. And then you think about it and you're like, oh, I love it. That's brilliant. You know, that kind of stuff. So I kind of think that kind of humor is what I gravitate towards. So very sad to see that Norm Macdonald passed.
Yeah. He did some great interviews. He did one with Alan Bastable and there were some great quotes in that. And if people want to look for that, it's a good one. And, you know, some of his quotes in there, he talked about Tiger. I mean, he loved Tiger Woods and, you know, he one of the quotes that I pulled out from it, you know, the fact he talked obviously a lot about one of his favorite things to do is watch PGA Tour golf. It didn't matter. You know, they asked him if he'd want to go and watch some of his old movies or forget that. I'm going to go watch PGA Tour. But he basically said one thing about Tiger. I want to see golf prosper because I've watched golf ever since I was a kid. And before Tiger, like, no one understood it. You tried to explain golf to someone back then, it was just middle-aged men playing the world's slowest sport. Then when Tiger came along, at least he generated some interest. And, you know, he said that in 2010, and, you know, it's bang on as good of analysis as anybody who's in the industry could provide.
Yeah, spot on. I mean, that's true. Like we were talking about before, a superstar, you need a superstar. And that's definitely what golf had.
Yeah, for sure. Now, talking about superstars, Ryder Cup coming up, you're American, so maybe you're a little bit more invested in it on your side of it. Us in Canada, we're technically a little bit more neutral, so maybe we're not as passionate, but what are your thoughts of this upcoming Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits, which obviously, you know, was delayed? I've got a 2020 Whistling Straits shirt on here, but are you looking forward to it? You can be watching every single minute of it. What do you think your chances are for your American squad? I assume you're cheering for the American squad.
Yeah, I don't get I'm from the United States, I'm cheering for the European team thing. And I also don't get there's a couple, I could add some bogeys on the card.
Sure.
Definitely for this. But I don't get it's just an exhibition thing.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that will never make the President's Cup. This is, everybody knows this fact. But when you know, Jack and Gary Player said, let's call it a tie, you know, that drives me nuts. I was like, where's Herm Edwards? Where's he play to win the game? Where is this? And the Ryder Cup is definitely, in my opinion, I think it's not an exhibition. It's, although it is, but it means something to country. And in a way, it's almost like we're the Red Sox now before they beat the Yankees. Which is ironic since I'm talking about the Yankees, but we're trying to get over that hump and say, oh yeah, our world ranking points and FedEx Cup points outrank the Euros. So we should win this and we don't. And everybody wants to know why, you know, why.
But do you think that, I mean, we can get into a million permutations of why it is. And, you know, again, there's lots of different things that play into the factors here, but do you think some of the big interest here is that, you know, the US always used to dominate world competition? Obviously, you know, European teams, other countries, more people have taken up the game. So obviously they've come up to make it competitive, which, you know, we didn't necessarily see over the years back in the days when it was GB and I, and, you know, Europe wasn't involved in this championship. But do you think it's just a big sense of pride of the fact that, hey, we're still the dominant force in golf, and we have to defend that?
Well, I think it's more of a we should be the dominant force in the Ryder Cup, but that doesn't mean we are, right? And obviously there's the competition exists for a reason. You have to play in order to decide the winner.
What do you mean? So, they don't just hand you the trophy based on paper rankings?
This is no participation trophies here. Yeah. You should feel like, you know, Hunter Mahan duffing that chip and how he felt.
Yeah.
And what that led to, you know, that was a huge moment in Ryder Cup history. I don't know if everybody, you know, out there really remembers it, but that sums up kind of how you should feel if you lose, in my opinion. I think that, you know, Brooks's article was spot on. We're forced to prepare in a way that we don't prepare for majors. Mm. Individual sport, you've got your own routine. And now you're making me part of this team, how you see fit. And there's a lot of clashing there. You know, these guys, that's one of the reasons where, even though they wouldn't say it, a lot of guys didn't go over and play in the Olympics because totally out of your routine and element as well.
Do you think the teams or the competition would be better, for an example? I mean, I get it. On one sense, we want the Ryder Cup to be this big commercial thing. We want it to have, you know, some level of success, some notoriety. But, you know, in essence, though, you know, if all of a sudden you're making it about opening ceremonies and, you know, whatever else is going on outside of the golf, do you think you're actually taking away from the quality of golf because you have all this pomp and circumstance around it?
Well, there's opening and closing, and it's very Olympic in the way it's, you know, and you get the all the WAG articles and so forth that come out about it.
And Tiger, and apparently Brooks doesn't get his naps.
And Brooks doesn't get his naps because he's got to go to the gym at 5 a.m. Yeah. You know, that's what you have to do to get it in. I can see how that's a distraction. I mean, as just someone who, I think this is where the problem occurs. When you hear this, you and I hearing this, you're like, man, I would not be complaining about any of this. This is beyond first world problems.
Of course, it's not our reality, right?
Right, right. It's like I would give my left something to be part of this. You know, I can't be foot or hand, so I don't know what. But it's problematic as much as it is nice to hear. You know, the pods are back, right? We've got the pods back that Azinger, who they should, if you look back, and I tweeted this morning, the Ryder Cup team that he won with really just outnumbered and outgunned is amazing. The guy should have a 40-foot statue somewhere for winning.
Oh god.
But
do you think that's because of the pods, or you just think it was the circumstances where those players played the best and won, or whether was something that happened within those pods influenced the players to be more comfortable and more on their games?
Well, it influenced them enough to where, you know, Phil threw Watson under the bus during by abandoning them in 2010 and 2012. And then I think 16, they came back, right? 2014, no. And then 16,
I believe,
I remember correctly.
It didn't work out well for the Solheim Cup this year for the American side. They had pods.
But it seemed to me that was a very, you know, you could dive into that too, but it seemed like everything there was very lighthearted.
Right.
You know, if you remember, look at the difference when Tiger Woods, during one of his injuries, comes back. And I remember him laughing after hitting the ball. I think it was in the water on 16 at the Masters. And he came after the round. He said, and I don't know, I don't remember exactly what year this was. Maybe it was around 2016 or somewhere around there. He said that, you know, I wasn't playing golf mean, and that's not me.
Hmm. Interesting.
Something to that effect.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to be all lighthearted and, I don't know, go back and play ping pong, maybe it works for some people, maybe it doesn't. Maybe, you know, I kind of get it that Koepka doesn't prepare that way. Mm-hmm. He would need, you know, to be serious. Some other people might be, although he did say, hey, I just pick up my sticks. I can play good. I can play bad. Who knows, you know, but I own every shot type of thing.
Yeah. Do you think it's in Stricker's best interest then to, while it is a team, to let them be the individuals that they are within the team if they're going to be successful?
Well, that's the thing, is success then leads to, it's kind of a catch-22, right? If you have success, you should continue using that. The US squad did that and then they stopped and they didn't have success, right? So you can argue that, well, the pods, what do we do differently? What do we have to do? All right. Well, maybe that did have an effect. Yeah. But if they went as individuals and then just showed up at the first tee and then they, you know, storm the castle there, then maybe that's the way to go. But unfortunately, until one of those is proven to be a good philosophy, then you really don't know. And it's got to be that judgment call, and it falls on the captains and assistant captains and probably the, you know, 70 other people that we don't see.
And in the end, it probably just is a guess every single time anyways, because, you know, whatever they did and they win, it's not always correlated between the two. The one didn't necessarily cause the other. It could have just happened at the same time. So, but I guess we get to talk about it. So that makes sense.
I mean, maybe someone needs to show up on the first team. Maybe we need Boo Weekly and an assistant captain and a turf person hat or something like that.
I love it.
You know, like kind of like the Sutton, but in a funny way.
Yeah. And I think Steph and I are going to probably, you know, talk about it in the next little while, but, you know, we could certainly have a different configuration of teams where we picked a team purely for entertainment versus, you know, competition. And that could be fun to do too, but.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. That could be really interesting. Hey, you know, Boo Weekly might make a comeback there. A couple other events just to get to this week, as far as the week coming ahead, LPGA is back and the PGA Tour is back as well. How much of this PGA Tour event in Napa are you going to be even watching?
I'm probably not going to consume either of those things. Right. Probably don't have the time. It's probably not going to happen. It's just like you said,
simple as that.
off season is a par, and you know, this we can add another par week.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing, obviously LPGA Tour, I think it's 9 events they have left. So they've still got, you know, a lot to play for here. I'll probably watch it a little bit. I wouldn't say a lot. The only interest I really have for the PGA Tour event is the fact that 25 of the 27 rookies are playing. So it'd be nice to see a little bit of, you know, what they can do in kind of their first events. But otherwise, I don't think the Silverado Resort golf course does much for me.
No, it doesn't. Does it move the needle for you?
It doesn't. And I mean, even a lot of the players, I think, you know, off the record talking to some different players, I think some of them are more excited just to get to Napa and tour some of the wineries.
Yeah, of course. I would think so. Well, you know, if you want to watch, you know, check Peacock for listings.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know where it is. I have no idea.
All right, one last little note here. Ryder Cup related. Bryson DeChambeau, who we avoid trying to talk about on the show, but sometimes we just can't because he's kind of the topic of the day. He is expected to compete in the World Long Drive Championship after the Ryder Cup, taking a little bit of heat because people think he's spending too much time prepping for long drive rather than getting points, although he's clapped back on that on social media. Do you care at all that he's playing, you know, trying to compete in the World Long Drive?
I don't see how that would affect his performance really in the Ryder Cup. You can't really say, it's all speculation.
Yeah, of course.
You know, this is something you can argue that it's something that makes him happy. So you don't want him to be grumpy. We don't want a grumpy Bryson.
That's a good angle. Yeah.
Or grumpy. We don't want him to be grumpy. So let him have his fun. I mean, he's not going to, I think if there's one thing that you can argue is Bryson, he'll be the most prepared out of anyone. He will go and spend as much time as it possibly takes to be prepared for an event. So I don't worry about it in that aspect of it.
My only worry is that during this broadcast, when we need to be focusing on Ryder Cup, things that are going on, deep analysis, you know, commentary, news tidbits or whatever, that they're just going to be talking about Bryson getting ready over and over again, talking about the World Long Drive.
They will. It'll, and you know, we're going to have, you know, Steph Curry on the coverage and things like that. So that's automatically, we're trying to bring in people to the Ryder Cup that normally wouldn't watch. Maybe we can get that. This is Steph Curry. Curry is the LPGA hoodie of broadcasting, if you want to look at it that way, right? Generate that interest. So those things a little bit as a true golf fan kind of worry me, right? Because
they seem gimmicky a little bit, right?
Yeah, a little gimmicky. Or are we trying to make it an exhibition? But you know, overall, it's still good for the yeah. game. I am looking forward to seeing him in the long drive. I mean, that's going to be must see TV. Honestly,
when he gets trounced.
yeah, that's what you're going to see. He's going to get trounced and he's going to get mad. So
yeah. Well, I've been to World Long Drive Championship and you know, watched Tim Burke win in Vegas in 13. And, you know, at that point, he hit that drive that year, I think 427, you know, and I'm seeing ramp ups here of Bryson getting ready and, you know, 145 club head speed, 206 ball speed. That's, you know, that's 20 less than some of the top guys are putting out now on the World Long Drive circuit. So I think it's, you know, it's fine, whatever. As you said, makes him happy, but I don't expect him to be, you know, competitive when it comes down to the end.
Yeah. Is he using a standard length driver or did he go to like 50 or something?
I am not sure. No, he can't have a 50. 48 would be your limit for that. I'm not sure. Obviously watching a little bit of his social media and stuff. I know he's experimented with it, so I don't know if he's going to bring it out for that. He's also in the situation too, that, you know, you've got to have the drivers have a little less CT just for the fact that, you know, they're going to be destroyed otherwise, but, right. You know, he's getting in the stratosphere where, you know, he'd have to get perfect impact conditions, you know, to really compete with the big boys. But yeah, again, it adds another element, and I'm sure for them at the World Long Drive, I'm sure they're just interested in having his viewership, you know, put their eyeballs on it for sure. Well, same. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't know if he's aware, but he should check out baldnamic.com. And then he might gain up to 20 yards on that.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And the Steph Curry thing, just a quick mention of that. Obviously NBC, you know, they're going to have him across multiple platforms. They basically say, you know, he's there kind of as somebody who's obviously performed at the highest levels of game, knows a lot about team play. I guess that's how they're given the validity. And, you know, unfortunately the NBC press release related to it really talked about, you know, his play in Corn Ferry Tour events and whatever. And I'm like, okay, well, that doesn't make him an extra good as far as an analysis, for the Ryder Cup, but I'm sure he won't be the only celebrity on the grounds.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the next couple weeks, not this one, but 2 weeks from now. And I'm going to consume probably every single minute of Ryder Cup coverage. I bet you. I haven't looked into, I know they're going to have different feeds and so forth, and that'll be interesting to see. But I kind of like live for it ever since 99.
Yeah.
You know, that was yep. It. So that makes it much more than an exhibition for me. So it's good. I'm excited for it to come around.
Yeah, and the visuals are going to be great with Whistling Straits as well. I mean, I can't wait to see a million drone shots of that. That can't be a bad thing.
Someone make sure the bunker rule is up there for DJ. And yes. We'll be good.
Yeah, we're all set. All right, let's get to the mailbag this week. We actually got a few questions came in pretty quickly and a couple that are specific to you. Y'all ready to answer some mail?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's go for Rob right away. What does this say? The pitcher you had the biggest reaction to on Name the Pro on Twitter.
Well, it's interesting. The first picture I ever posted was right like day one of pandemic lockdown in New Jersey, which was, I think it was the 15th or 16th of March of 2020. And I woke up the next morning and I log into Twitter and I get this splash screen that says, "You're getting a lot of replies. Do you want to apply filters?" And I'm like, what the heck is this? You know,
Twitter has filters.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This has got to be wrong. So I looked on and it was this, you know, this picture, Corey Pavin with the big mustache, like John Oates from Hall and Oates and that type of thing. And I had hundreds of replies. I couldn't believe it. So that was the biggest initial reaction. I posted a couple more. The one that I can find that got the biggest one was a Miguel Angel Jimenez tweet. And just give you an idea, there's like 67,000 impressions and 18,000 engagements. It's crazy that how some of these have gone. I know there are a couple that went more. I think there was a Stuart Appleby one that had something like 300,000 impressions or something. So that with long hair and a visor is crazy. I didn't remember the Appleby years for those, but I'll tell you, I appreciate everybody that, you know, joins me nearly every day doing this for the last year and a half. As just something silly and stupid, and you can be creative and send your GIF and GIF replies and so forth. I love it, and I try to respond to everyone or at least like it. But sometimes there's too many.
Yeah, I think the hardest part sometimes is that if you don't jump in there quickly, someone thinks the same thing and steals your idea. So it's hard to respond to have something original.
But
that's part of the fun, anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Imitation is a form of flattery, right?
Yeah, you're trying to dig into the obscure pieces of your mind to try to come up with something. But yeah, we appreciate that. Definitely provides a little bit of fun, that's for sure. All right, either a team wins or loses. This is related to the Ryder Cup. Someone has to be on each side. Do we have too much angst as Americans about losing or winning?
No.
No, there can't be.
No, there isn't. You should be mad to get beat.
Nice.
Period. You know,
it's not an exhibition.
It's not an exhibition. You do it. You play for country, and it's something where, you know, it's different than the FedEx Cup. You're playing for $15 million, right? You're playing for money.
There's no net in Ryder Cup.
The worst thing in my head, if you ever look at the description of the FedEx Cup, I wish I had the picture, but it was like at the BMW Championship when I'm somewhere in, I don't know, Chicago area a couple years ago. And it's like the FedEx Cup is the trophy that's awarded to the person with the most FedEx Cup points at the end of the FedEx Cup tournament or something, blah, blah, blah. You know, just, it's like, wow, that's prestigious. Very prestigious.
Oh, man.
Ryder Cup has a lot of history to it, and you should care. You should absolutely care. You know, you can handle it however you want. We all handle, you know, grief and winning and losing our own ways, but you should absolutely care about it.
I like it. You get invested in it. And obviously this is from an American perspective. I was just thinking, as you said that, one of the fastest ways to destroy the Ryder Cup would be look back at the players' seasons throughout the year, look at their stroke averages, and start to assign handicaps within these matches. Oh, that would make it a zero right away for me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I know. Let's have a staggered start Ryder Cup, please.
Oh boy. All right, let's get to the next one here. What's the best innovation in golf equipment that you've seen in the last 5 years?
Oh my God.
That's a big one, and that's a big period of time. So I get it if you maybe don't pick your favorite run right off the start because maybe you don't remember it, but is there something that's jumped out? And it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, hard goods themselves. It could be something related to it, could be an accessory item, could be a technology. Thoughts of something that jumps out at you right away?
Well, maybe it's not 5 years, but I think that face technology on a putter is the real deal. Now, I also believe that you could putt with anything. I mean, you can. Right. We've all done that. We've all gone through and switched putters, and all of a sudden you're draining everything. You're like, wow, I just switched it up. I went to
putters for me.
Center. This is the best. And then, to quote Lee Trevino, it's like, you know, you'll have a few good rounds with a putter, but the putter's just getting to know you. That's the problem, you know? And then all of a sudden it's like, I got to go back to my old gamer, you know, that type of thing. But I've seen back in the Nike oven days, and I'm sure you've seen this too, you get fit and you could see with a traditional just milled face putter, you'll see that the ball skids for the first 3 or 4 inches and you don't get that forward roll. And that was the whole point of, you know, those Method putters back in the day, which I thought were excellent. Actually, the higher end model was great, having that polymer that's in there. But, you know, everybody's got that. Most have that, some sort of that technology in their putter faces. You can like it or not, but I think it definitely works, and it makes sense for you to, as a player, to you know, explore that space.
I like that. And I certainly had one of those Method putters, and I still have one. So it's not in the bag right now, but you're right. It's one of those ones that sort of, you know, brought to light a lot of the, you know, interaction between a club and a ball and why it was so important. And, you know, that sort of leads me to me as far as my selection of those 5 years. Something that stood out is the interaction again between the face and the ball, but for Ping and their Hydro Pearl finish, which I don't know if you played around with this too much, but and, you know, more manufacturers are dealing with it. This Hydro Pearl finish that they have on these Ping clubs, the whole idea with it is that it's supposed to help not have moisture on the face of the club. And the idea there is that you're going to keep the friction levels a lot more consistent, especially really important with chips and pitches, but important with iron shots as well. Friction is a really big deal. And we see a lot of variances in chips and pitches because of a lack of friction when club faces get wet and so forth. So Ping's step forward, I think, in the last number of years of using that finish, first on wedges and now in irons as well. I think that's one of the biggest ones that I've seen.
Well, I think that's a great one. And after Bryson checks out ballnamic.com, I think maybe we should look into that.
Yeah, are you looking for a check from Pete Samuels from the marketing department?
although that does put someone out of a job in the Bryson. So I don't know how I feel about that, but I think that's a really good point. I think that's you're right.
All right. Here's another one specifically for you. For Rob, do you still do any golf cover designs for fun? I know you did some for Golf WRX.
Boy, I did. I miss doing golf covers. That was those were good times to be able to do that for fun. And then
I might have a couple in my basement still.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a few. The best one was the MTV logo flipped upside down that said WRX, and that was pretty cool. I thought the dancing logos, but I have one that I wish I could get. Actually, there's two I wish I could get made. And maybe I have to look at that. So if anybody's a head cover person, feel free to hit me up at Rob Miller Time, Twitter or Instagram or whatever. But that I do wish that. As a matter of fact, the thing that really intrigued me is we had one that was kind of is it Flying Tigers, which is the plane with the teeth on it back in.
We did one of those.
I came up with some design and we sold a ton of those covers. I don't know how much. I mean, I didn't get paid for it or anything, but when the Open at Bethpage came around in 2009, we were shut down and we were told, oh, you can't do those covers anymore by the manufacturer. And we're like, why? Why can't we? It's like, they said, well, we were told we can't do them anymore. I'm like, who told you? We didn't tell you or anything like that. But to, you know,
and it wasn't Rob's mom.
Yeah, it was not my mom or anyone else that I knew, but I'll protect the names. It was Cotty Scammerin apparently had some.
Ah, okay.
And we're a similar design. And if you look at it, the 2009, this is speculation, but
of course.
The 2009 putter cover is like the front of a plane and gotcha. Has like the lady on it and everything like that. And very similar because there's Farmingdale Airport, which I flew into to watch the Open.
And we'll say that's the Farmingdale Airport. That's not the jet port. That's just down the ways, right?
It is not.
Not the jet port, the heliport. I'm sorry. I apologize. Right down by the beach.
Yeah, there is a, you know, the interesting thing to park a plane, $2.50.
Amazing. To park a car, how much?
I know. It was crazy. So, but you there's a World War II, I think, history there at Farmingdale Airport and so forth. And there's a little museum inside and cool. So forth. But anyway, so I wish I could do it again. If I have the opportunity to, I certainly will dive into it.
Well, there you go. Maybe you need to do something on your own with the Rob Miller Time for sure. All right. Two questions left here. One for you and one general. We'll go with the general one first. Who is the best on-course dresser in men's golf today? If that's something you pay attention to.
Well, you know, you have to be, you can wear anything. And if you're thin, it's so easy.
Which we are not.
Like, give me Jason Kokrak style any day. You know, that I'll take it. You know,
give me a tarp, a really extra large belt, and
anywhere, you know, with comfort and so forth. But you know, I'd go with, since he got snubbed for the Ryder Cup, let's go for Billy Horschel there. Yeah. I think, you know, I still remember he wore either squid or Kraken pants or whatever they were.
Squid ones.
Those are pretty cool. I wish I could never pull that off. So I'd have to go with that.
Yeah, and I was right there with you on that. And I think one of the things that lends itself into it as well now is, you know, footwear. I think a lot of players are distinguishing themselves a little bit with their footwear. We're seeing some more traditional looks come back, be it with, you know, FootJoy in the Premier Series, for example, or a, you know, a G4 or another companies that, you know, they're looking at something that are a little bit more classic. So I think that sort of plays into it as well. And, you know, maybe we won't see the Macklemore collabs out on the tour at any point.
I guess it'll happen at some point. I mean, if you've got the money to pay someone, you'll wear it. I mean, we all see the Nike hats. We all see it.
Oh, we do. All right. Last one here. Rob, if you had to play golf with a member of KISS, who would it be? Obviously, this person follows you a bit on social media and knows what you do. What's your call there?
Yeah, I love this question. Love it. It's fantastic. And I thought about it. Originally I had an answer and then I changed and then I said, no, got to go with your gut, right?
Yeah.
You know, your caddy tells you what to do. You do it. This is what happens. And I'd go with Tommy Thayer, even though he's not
really
an original member of KISS.
Okay.
But I'm talking about it's golf. It's play golf. It's not hangout. I think, Tommy gets a custom KISS wedges from Callaway. I know that Victor V.A. Shafts is a good friend of his and so forth. He's involved in the golf industry. He does some charitable tournaments and things like that. Plus about 9 handicap, the last that I saw. So we're right there. I'm only giving him like half a pop aside.
I like it. Not a lot of candy.
We have to compete. And I think I'd go with Tommy. And the other thing I thought about Gene, right? I thought about it, but he'd probably charge me. So
he's got to make some money on everything.
Yeah, it's
right?
That would be it. So that would it's true. My wife came up with that point, and I think she's spot on.
That's very valid. I'd like to see. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if you have one in your collection, but I don't know if they make one, but I'm assuming because Gene Simmons, you know, has his name and is involved with just everything. Are there KISS head covers for like putters? Have you seen one ever?
I think I saw something made custom for a driver, but I haven't seen anything putter wise.
Huh, interesting.
You know, but I'm surprised if maybe that's the head cover I need to make.
Maybe it is. All right, everybody. Thanks for the questions. Certainly keep them coming. We do a call out for them every week on social media. So certainly get them into the mailbag. Thanks, Rob, for joining us for that. I'm just going to wrap up the show here a little bit with a little bit of a tip of the week. And hey, maybe you can contribute. I mean, you know, 8-9 handicap, you got some takes on this as well. But I just want to say, as far as putting alignment, you know, I was doing a little bit of work with a couple of students in the last little week. And really the simplest and most effective way to improve your putting is to have good alignment as far as the club face. Path doesn't play a big factor in where a golf ball starts and how it rolls. Face alignment is super, super important. So really simple way to work on it for a lot of people. Get out something like a yardstick or a meter stick, however you put it. Now, Rob, I don't know what you deal with down there, yardstick probably, but you can buy one fairly cheaply at a Lowe's or Home Depot. Under $10, the ones that have a little bit of a hole on the end, which you can use to hang up, and you can set that up, you know, 3 feet or so from the hole. So obviously you have got the hole at the end of it. You can put the ball inside the little hole that's at the end. And I should distinguish between putting hole and putting cup and the little hole that's in the ruler. And then basically you can set up to hit a putt, and you can see that your club face is set up 90 degrees to the ruler and to the hole. And that's a good way just to, calibrate yourself, because I think what most people do all the time is they're so used to looking at the putter in one way that they think it's perfect, and you need to calibrate yourself. So just to get used to it being square, work on that, practice setting up until you can get it right all the time. You'll save a lot of strokes just because you'll be able to start the golf ball where you need it to, which is one of the primary things that's important as far as successful putting. Any thoughts on that one?
I like that tip. It's anyone can do it. And I think that's the simplicity of it is with any golf tip. And this is the reigning thing with Trevino Tuesday. When I post a tip is that in 60 seconds, you've got something which is in your arsenal now. And I think this is great. It's awesome. It's readily available. The only thing is that you're not making $25 for every yardstick.
No, you're not. And you can actually, you don't necessarily need a putting green to do this as well, because obviously the surface of the yardstick is providing your surface of what the ball is going to move along. You can do it on carpet, hardwood, whatever the case may be. Work on it at home. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening this week. Thanks, Rob. Where can everybody find you? You know, we've mentioned you on social media and having a social media presence, but what's the easiest way for people to find you in there?
Yeah, it's Rob Miller Time, one word on Twitter or Instagram. You can send me an email, robmillertime@gmail.com. Anywhere I'm around. I really appreciate the time here. It was a lot of fun to come on. So thank you very much for having me on Tea Talk.
Always good to get together with you, whether it's virtually or in person. I'm looking forward to seeing you in person again at some point. Thanks, everyone. Thanks to Chris Caldwell from Mizuno Golf for jumping on to talk about their new equipment. And you know what? That's episode 132 in the tank. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next week.